Baby, talk to me. It's wrestling podcast time once again. Yes, it is. It is Friday. Thank goodness for that. And we are back with some more of that non-e goodness that you've come to love. Yes, baby boy. It's your man Liam here alongside Gareth. Say hi, mate.
Hey.
You, my friends, have joined us on the Inside the Ropes podcast network. We're live with the wrestling podcast. That's wrestling spelled W-R-S-T-L-I-N-G. We're talking all the graps without the E. But you know the deal by now. Me and G, we're not anti-E. We are simply pro wrestling. And this week, we got two very fun shows to be looking at indeed. We got Shine 66 from the US of A. And then we head over to Japan for Chocky P, Choco Pros. Hashtag 85 show with friend of the show Balianaki and Mei Suruga against Tropical Amari in a big tag title match. Looking forward to talking about that one. So we're kicking things off with Shine Wrestling. Shine is an American promotion, an all-women's promotion, generally based out of New York. It's actually the sister promotion to a company that we covered last year, which is Shimmer Women's Athletes. They air specifically on WWN Live, so that used to be the home of Evolve. There's a couple of other promotions under that banner, but they've been going for quite a bit of time now, since 2012. Lots of very good American independent female wrestlers pass through Shine. They've had some really big names there and still do. You know, the likes of Allison Kay, Kimberly, Ivelisse, just to name a few that are on this show we're talking about today. So a really exciting promotion. But what I like about Shine as well is it's a bit of a learning ground, I think, as well. You see a lot of people perhaps a little bit earlier in their development working Shine than perhaps you do in Shimmer, as an example. So you really do get a bit of a glimpse of who's going to be next. And there's definitely a few of those on the show as well. So G-Money, you were up late at night live tweeting this bad boy. I can tell by the look in your eyes, or lack thereof. So what did you think of this show, if you can remember back that far?
I really enjoyed it for the most part. Not without its faults. Most cards these days, isn't it? You know, there's going to be niggles. But yeah, I really liked it. It sort of kicked off in a fun way. I think it was their first card back in approximately a year. Mm-hmm. So I like that you had the tag champs there, the people they were supposed to be defending against couldn't make the show for one reason or another. And so they had a very quick title defense against a couple of unknowns to kind of kick off the night, which I thought was good fun and good heel behavior.
Yeah, this is the kind of thing that I always really enjoy when attending a live show. So you get the sort of angle right at the start that leads to a match later on. So yes, you immediately get that bit of story. I always think that's a great way to kick off. So it was nice seeing it here, actually. Really good. And I thought the tag champs are Better Than You, or BTY, Jamie Jameson and Marty Bell. They looked really good. And Marty Bell in particular, you can tell she's had that television experience because she does so much jawjacking with the crowd. And it's a funny one because I feel like she's been a bit unlucky in some cases because she's had maybe one or two fairly high profile matches that didn't perhaps go the way she would have hoped. And that has almost followed her around a bit, which I think is grossly unfair because she does good stuff. And I really do think she's a good character in there.
Yeah, definitely. I think she's got a lot to offer. I always really enjoy her along with Allison Kay. They obviously sort of teaming up in Shimmer more recently.
Yeah.
We saw them back on the Shimmer show we covered as part of the Collective event earlier last year. So we had, to follow that tag title matchup, we had the two Lees come out that were supposed to be facing each other later on in the night. Kimberly and Stormy Lee came out and ended up throwing down the gauntlet to Better Than You for later in the evening.
I have to say, I think Better Than You got off lightly, actually, because there are a few other Lees in the house, as I understand it. Just my sources tell me that Dairy Lee was available, formerly, previously.
Terrible.
I mean, it could have got serious.
Absolutely awful.
I'm literally a dad now, so this is my material level. I'm so sorry.
Yeah, and that really worked for me. I thought, you know, a wrestling trope, isn't it? The kind of thrown together opponents come tag team. And I thought it worked about as well as it can here, I guess.
Yeah, if I was to have an issue, when Kimberly initially came out to kind of set the table for that match, having not digested a huge amount of Shine prior to this show, I really couldn't tell if she was trying to be a babyface or a heel. And then when Stormy Lee came out as well, they immediately had friction. So it left me slightly cold in the sense that it was like, okay, is this just a heel on heel thing?
Yeah,
it's,
sure.
It's fine. But that part of it, I think perhaps could have been tweaked ever so slightly just to put you behind it. But one of the challenging things that I've always found with Shine, and indeed Evolve as well, is the crowd's always dead quiet, I think. I don't know. I don't know if that's just how it comes across on TV. I know you've seen them live a few times. Is it slightly different when you're in the room?
No, I've kind of found the same thing. I think my experience of attending Evolve shows has been over WrestleMania weekends. I never followed it week to week, month to month, but I knew so many of the names that were competing on the cards, and so you rock up based off of those names, and then you've got all this undercard stuff going on with people you're unfamiliar with, and yeah, it was always a little bit difficult to kind of get into at first. You kind of end up sitting on your hands a little bit, and it takes a while to kind of warm up to the kind of these unknowns, I guess.
Yeah, which is a shame, because actually the earlier portion of the show I thought was really good. You know, the first three matches, I can't say that I knew any of the participants ahead of time, but I was thoroughly impressed with several of them.
Mm-hmm.
But that does seem to be a frequent thing with these WWN shows that maybe they're done in libraries or something, but the reaction isn't befitting the action.
You know?
It should be louder, I think, anyway. But hey, you support wrestling how you want to support it. But yeah, I think as a result, perhaps this, what should have been quite a hot show opening angle, maybe didn't have the punch it would have done if it had been in, say, the Electric Ballroom or something like that, where you've got a typically live crowd.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was good stuff. So let's just whip through these early singles matches, because I don't know if you're familiar with any of these people, but they're all new to me, and that's why I love doing the show, to be honest with you.
Absolutely.
Finding new wrestlers early doors. So the first singles match of the night was Harlow O'Hara against Erica Torres. Both of these guys had a sort of mystical kind of gimmick to them. There was something going on there. But Erica Torres, they were saying on commentary, was also from an MMA background. So, and her gear kind of reflected that, although she wore horns to the ring. So there was something a little bit blurry there. But hey, when she got in the ring, I thought she was incredible. She was so strong, and some of her offense was incredible. I mean, at one point, she had Harlow in position for, you know, when Will Ospreay does that cheeky Nando's kick where he got the head tucked, and she did this crazy shotgun drop kick instead of the kick.
Yeah.
It looked absolutely brutal, like it took her head out of the game. But
that was one of those moments that really stood out to me.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought there was such a great little sequence of kicks there. There was that one, and followed up with another one, and then ended up with a massive powerbomb.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was just like a great little sequence there in that match.
Yeah, so I thought this was a really good exhibition for both competitors, and you know, two people I'd like to see more of. So that
definitely
was very exciting.
Going into this, I was just like really interested in both of their looks. Immediately, I was just like, oh, this is interesting, by virtue of them coming out and looking intriguing.
Yeah.
And I think Harlow maybe had... Have you ever seen the film Mother?
No, I haven't seen Mother.
It's got Jennifer Lawrence in.
Mm.
It feels like she's got... Her gimmick is maybe based off of that, was my feeling. I don't have any confirmation on this, but that's just the vibe that I got from it.
This is ridiculously superficial, but I don't think I've ever seen anybody in wrestling have the same color of hair that Harlow O'Hara had, and that immediately made her stand out to me. I don't know why, but yeah, I thought this was good fun. Next up, it was Ava Everett against somebody who had the benefit of a promo beforehand in the sort of video section of the show, which was Sahara 7. And I was quite impressed with Sahara 7. I don't know that the match clicked as well as it might have done, but I thought she had some really unique offense. I really liked her entrance, and she has a sort of an Egyptian goddess kind of thing going on, not dissimilar to Chikara here in the UK, who's another women's wrestler I'm really high on. The only downside I would say is that it's not a downside, it's a suggestion, is I'd like to see that translate into the match itself, you know, maybe incorporate some sort of movements or mannerisms befitting that gimmick. It sort of felt like once the entrance was over that she was sort of just a wrestler, and that's fine, but I just think you could maybe just take it a little bit further.
Yeah, I enjoyed this one, but nothing really kind of stood out to me in this one. Nothing memorable, but like I think a good exhibition for both competitors.
Oh, let me jog your memory then, because there was something really cool. Well, at least I thought it was really cool. Was Seven hit Ava Everett with this just beautiful basement European uppercut at one point, which just, oh man, she went out with some velocity. I was really, really impressed with that. But yeah, other than that, it was a match and it was absolutely fine. On to something that was pretty damn good, though, in my opinion, was the ACW Women's title match between defending champion Ali Rex and Amber Nova. Had you seen either of these two before?
No, I hadn't.
Yeah, me neither, which seems odd because commentary had spoken about how long both of them had been around. But I was really impressed with this one. This is a really heavy on athleticism kind of match. I thought Amber Nova was a good babyface, had some really cool looking moves. Ali Rex had a generally cool presence to her, I thought. She seemed like the more seasoned of the two, and I thought she did a really good job of playing up to the crowd and being a bit of a baddie. But overall, I thought this was a really fun match. The finish was a little sudden, but aside from that, thumbs up from me.
Yeah, absolutely. I just thought it did a really good job of making Nova look really dominant, like a real ass kicker. And then having her lose in that way, I didn't feel like did her any harm. It was obviously very disappointing for her as a character to have been sort of so dominant and to then lose, but it wasn't like a slipping on a banana peel type finish that would make her look bad. You know, everybody gets caught in a pinning combination that gets them every now and again.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was a pretty sneaky, quick roll-up. But what I really liked was that Ali Rex immediately kind of went to the outside of the ring. You know, she's just won. And Amber Nova, rather than just sitting there and kind of looking around bemused, which you see so often, sort of immediately attempted to follow her to sort of keep on fighting, and the referee pulled her back. That just felt a bit more legitimate to me.
It's a nice touch.
You know, she's still in the heat of the moment. She wouldn't immediately just be like, oh, I've lost. That's a shame.
It's difficult to kind of switch that off, isn't it?
Yeah, I thought that was a really nice touch and really good stuff. And this is one I want to see again, actually. So, yeah, these are two I'll be keeping an eye on going forward. But I would like to see this match happen again.
The next match I really enjoyed.
Match of the night for me.
Yeah, I would say so. I thought both competitors here were just good value, good fun, had a lot going for them.
Yeah.
So we had the Shine Nova title being defended by champion Natalia Markova against the Woad, the weapon of ass destruction.
It doesn't work so well if you do it in a British accent and it's the weapon of ass destruction. The weapon of ass destruction really works. I was looking at Woad and just thinking, how many more cool things do you want to add? You know, she already looks pretty badass with the eye patch. She looks pretty badass just generally. Then she's got bloody Wrecking Ball, like she's the absorbing man from Marvel. I was like, oh my gosh. And then she's called the Woad. It was great stuff. I was absolutely hooked by her. She was brilliant.
You know how sometimes, you know, things can be accused of like gilding the lily? Not so in this case. I loved that everything was just a hat on a hat on a hat. Like, the things individually are quite fun, but then you put them all into one package and you're just like, hell yeah, I can get down with this. This is great.
Do you know what she really needs? If she really wants to take it to the next level, is a metal arm.
I think that's a bit extreme.
No. Ever since Biker Mice from Mars, if you remember that reference.
I do. I had all the toys.
Yeah, you know, Modo had the metal armor. And since then, I've always thought that's the sign that you are the boss. You got the metal arm Cable from
Absolutely.
Marvel.
Yes, please.
Case in point. So, Woad, if you're listening.
What are you going to do? Just have her come out with her arm wrapped in tinfoil?
Yeah, something like that. I'll let them work that out. I'm the ideas guy. But yeah, it was really good. And she was great. Really cool. Fantastic facial expressions. Sort of the performer in me just loved everything that she did. And, you know, anybody that's listened to this podcast, particularly when we're talking about New Japan, know
exactly where you're going with this.
Know that we love some Taguchi-led offense here. We love people that attack with the butt. And, you know, my only hope is that eventually, if we follow the Woad more closely, we will see one of her opponents target the butt as a way to work around that. We're talking all the atomic drops. But, yeah, I thought this was really good stuff. And I liked her opponent as well, Natalia Markova. First time seeing her, again, had really cool gear for entrance as well as in the ring. And she just looked like a proper athlete.
100%.
In the sort of, you know, you could see her in the Olympics or something like that. Like, she was just stacked.
It looks like she could be like a triathlete or something,
doesn't
she?
Yeah, that's it, exactly. And, you know, with somebody with the presence of Woad, you need somebody who looks like that in order to feel like it's a legit fight, I thought anyway. So I really enjoyed this match. I thought these guys went at it, really fun offense throughout. And yes, okay, we had a bit of a lackluster finish. I could have lived with this one had the main event not had a lackluster finish as well, to be honest with you. But I want to see it again, so mission accomplished.
I do think that as a finish, it makes the Woad look not the brightest. You know, like, why clobber your opponent with a chair to cause a DQ in a title match?
Particularly when you're winning.
Exactly, yeah. It didn't make a lot of sense to me here. And that was just like a thread throughout the evening, was just silly DQs ruining otherwise very enjoyable matches.
If we were to just dip into the E for a second, one thing that I think AEW has done a really good job of dispelling is that it's not a problem to have straight finishes. You don't need to protect people with DQs and countouts. You can have straight finishes and still keep people strong, and people will still invest in them if you book them the right way. So there's no need for that. The odd one here and there, sure, no problem at all, particularly as a storytelling device. But the reality is here, and if we were to talk about the show as a whole, this was, I would say, it was a good show. And if you were looking to assign a grade to it, which we're not going to do here, but if we were, it would probably be dragged down by the fact that the best matches had the worst finishes.
Absolutely, yeah, 100%.
And that's a bit of a shame. But anyway, but great stuff. Those are two people that I'm going to be following closely going forward.
Definitely. I think they've created two new fans here, haven't they?
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. And Woad, metal arm. No problem at all. Check in the post. Okay, next up, a quick little singles match post-intermission between Gangrel, trainee Chelsea Durden, and Catalina Perez, who I believe has been on AEW Dark recently. I thought she actually looked quite impressive. You can kind of see when somebody's had that little bit of television exposure. There's a little je ne sais quoi to their performance. But yeah, what did you make of that one?
Yeah, I thought a good match to kind of bring us back from the intermission, which for me felt perfectly timed. I was exactly ready for another cup of tea at that point at about sort of 2:30 a.m.
Yeah, I bet you were. Yeah, fair enough. Okay, Shine Tag Team title match up next, and we teed this one up earlier, so it was Kimberly and Stormy Lee going up against Better Than You, who actually, I should just point out, have a badass theme song. Yeah, is that how, anything you can do, I can do better. I can do anything better than you. Yeah, it was great.
It really worked for me, yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
It fits perfect. I do think it is a testament to how the right theme tune can enhance an act.
Oh, it's massive. It's massive. Absolutely huge.
I think it's easy to forget sometimes, but I think this is just evidence of that fact that it made them seem like a bigger deal by virtue of just having a kick-ass theme tune.
Yeah, if you want a knee-led example there, just compare the fortunes of Robert Roode and Cesaro. You know, one's got an instantly memorable theme song and one hasn't, and I think it has a massive effect on their trajectory as performers, rightly or wrongly.
I couldn't hum Cesaro's theme tune. It's been quite a long time since I watched any WWE anyway, but like, I can't remember what his most recent theme tune was beyond the Real Americans theme tune.
Yeah,
which but never
you know
really
Bobby
fit.
Roode, though.
Yeah, exactly. Everyone knows the Bobby Roode theme tune.
Yeah, and I think it's a big part of the presentation. Yeah. So yeah, kudos to BTY for getting that bit bang on the money. This was a fun match.
I think it was a fun match.
Slightly marred by what appeared to be a genuine injury towards the end, unfortunately.
Oh, no, I didn't catch that. What?
Okay, well, maybe I'm misinterpreting, but from what I saw, it appeared that Jamie Jameson genuinely tweaked her knee.
Oh, no.
And kind of got out of the ring relatively quickly for Marty Bell to take over. And then there seemed to be a bit of a miscommunication at the end because I think Marty was aware or seemed aware of the problem. But then sort of, probably just out of force of habit, tagged her back in and Jamie got in the ring, but just remained in the corner the whole time whilst Marty continued. And then eventually Marty just got pinned. There was a tag whilst Jamie was still in the ring.
Mm.
So it all kind of suggests that maybe that something may have gone awry there, which is unfortunate because I think prior to that, it was a decent match.
It was a decent match. And I liked the finish in that I think Kimberly has got a beautiful swanton bomb.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it looks great. And more gold for Kimber is always a good thing in my book.
She's so good, isn't she?
Absolutely. Like, she's one of my kind of low-key favourite women's wrestlers out there at the moment.
Yeah, absolutely.
I don't think she maybe kind of gets the kind of props that she deserves. I think again, she's somebody that's done a really good job of bouncing back from her unsuccessful run in WWE. Yeah. And has done a really good job of kind of rebuilding herself as a, you know, great hand on the indie scene.
Yeah, she was actually involved in one of my favourite live matches that I've ever seen. She was against Nixon Newell, or you may know as Tegan Knox in WWE NXT. We saw her at a Dragon Pro show, I believe in Newport.
And is it Chikara?
Yeah, Chikara Link Up. Yeah, absolutely. And that was a really great match. And I remember it being really exciting because it felt like one that Nixon might just win.
Yeah.
You know, there was a bit of urgency to it. And yeah, that was really good stuff. Yeah.
I remember as well, like, off the back of that, us both just being like, Nixon Newell isn't long for the indie scene.
Nah.
Like, you could just tell, couldn't you?
Well, that kind of brings us quite neatly on to somebody who I'm amazed is still on the indie scene, which is Allison Kay. Can you put your finger on why? I mean, look, listen, we want her here in the wrestling podcast universe. Of course we do. But it just beggars belief for me because she's so good. You know, she's a great wrestler. She's a great promo. She's a great character, good actor. What's going on? Why hasn't she been snapped up yet?
Yeah, I'm really not sure. So had she been involved with like the NWA? Was that?
Yeah, so she was NWA champion, I think, whilst Power was on.
Yeah.
And
is she still tied in with them maybe?
Yeah, could well be. I mean, she's had feature spots with AEW, hasn't she? And she did the Mae Young Classic, or the second Mae Young Classic, a couple of years back. But yeah, she could well still be with NWA, but it just surprises me.
It's certainly not for lack of talent.
No.
So I think as well as having like a good look, she can go in the ring. I think she's got charisma and presence. You know, I think she's, you know, the kind of complete package. You could throw her onto AEW, you know, as a full-time member of the roster immediately.
Oh, yeah, and she'd elevate it massively. So if I had one little critique, and it's a choice as a performer, but I would argue that it might be a choice worth looking into, is that when I watch Allison Kay, more often than not, there's little kind of moments in the match where, I don't know, there's the space to improvise. And I feel like her instinct is to go comedic. If you look at when the pyro went off during her entrance, it was clearly too close to her. And, you know, immediately she did something quite funny. You know, like she made the most of that.
Yeah.
Whereas to me, she's a bit of a badass. She's got an MMA background. She's a bit of a killer. And maybe leave some of that stuff behind. And, you know, just in order to crystallize that main event aura. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a good point. I thought this was a good match. Right up until you had the false finish.
Mm.
Yeah, we thought we had a new champion, and then the match gets restarted, and then ultimately the second title match of the night that gets ended in a disappointing disqualification finish.
Yeah, that was a bit of a shame, but
for no good reason, really.
No, it didn't really seem to fit together, but you know, it was a good bell-to-bell encounter. I quite liked seeing Ivelisse work as a babyface. That was interesting, so I'm more used to seeing her play heel. But I thought she did good stuff here. Overall, I thought these two were good opponents for one another. It was quite a hard-hitting match, quite strike-heavy, and yeah, really enjoyed that.
I just feel like if you're coming back with your first card after nearly a year, you want to send the customers home happy. Like, I mean, if you'd paid to be there or you'd bought the pay-per-view and, you know, you're sent home like feeling a bit deflated, you're not necessarily going to be lining up to purchase their next show, are you? I don't think.
No.
You're going to maybe sit by and wait and see the results, right? And see like, oh, is this one worth getting? Should I track that down?
Yeah, I mean, the thing that struck me, and again, this isn't to be overly negative because I think as a show, it's perfectly enjoyable and it absolutely flew by, which I always think is a good thing. But if you'd look at, if you'd look at three of the four title matches. So let's take the tag team title match out and say that was, you know, the plan to finish one way or the other. But let's look at the ACW women's title match, the Shine Nova title match, and the Shine title match. Okay. All three of those ended with inconclusive finishes, which made me want to see a rematch. But you can't book your next show with the same three title matches. That's not going to draw peanuts, is it? So it doesn't make any sense to me. No. As a booking decision. And look, I'm just some geek on a podcast, so, you know, don't listen to me. But I don't see how that would entice people to pay more money to see the shows. Yes, I want to see those matches again, but do I want to see a complete replica of this card? No, not really. You know, you just can't do it like that.
Bright spots, but frustrating is the overall review of this one.
And we got to sort those mics out for the commentary.
Yes. Like, one of them sounded like he was 10 miles away.
Yeah, and then they switched at one point, and, you know, we watched our friends at Pro Wrestling Magic last week, who appear to be, you know, with all due respect, a much smaller outfit, and we didn't have those sort of sound issues.
No.
So that's, you know, WWN's been around for a long time. Tech issues happen, but we got to get that one sorted, I think, going forward. But yeah, aside from that.
A promotion with, I think, heaps of promise and good people on the roster, but just kind of needs a kind of shot in the arm when it comes to booking decisions and tech.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, I couldn't agree more. In the meantime, folks, do yourself a favor and check out some of these relative unknowns we've been talking about. So yeah, Natalia Markova, The Woad, Catalina Perez, Amber Nova, Ali Rex, Sahara 7, Harlow O'Hara, Erica Torres, Ava Everett. Go check them out.
Get your butts to YouTube. Just bang them in and track down some matches.
Get on it. Okay. All right. We're going to be chatting all the goings on from Choco Pro 85. Stay with us, people. We move.
And we're back. And in this half of the show, we're covering Choco Pro show number 85, which was an unusual one for them in that it was taking place in an actual wrestling ring.
Oh, I don't know how I feel about that.
It was different, wasn't it?
It was, yeah.
So it still felt like it carried the same spirit through. But, you know, when you've kind of trained your eyes to watching the usual Choco Pro situation unfold, you know, just on the mats, it felt very, very odd, but enjoyable.
Yeah, it took some getting used to for me anyway. I'm not sure I fully adjusted until sort of halfway through the show. That's not to say I didn't enjoy it, but it was just a very strange thing.
Yes.
And I don't know. I don't even know if I need to see them in a ring, really. I'd been wondering for a while what some of these guys are like in the ring. And then as soon as I saw it, I thought, do you know what? I don't need to see it. I'm quite happy with you guys on the mats and, you know, in your sort of special environment. I think as well, because I've recently been talking up how they're doing something so different and how much sense it makes. So to see them in a ring now, you know, in an empty room, I just found it a bit odd. But yeah, no, it was good fun.
Sure, and we had a sneaky theory as to, you know, maybe why they had use of this ring today, didn't we?
We did, yeah. So of course, All Elite Wrestling have their big kind of women's tournament on the cards, with half of the bracket seemingly emerging from Japan, and we wondered, giving the Emi Sakura link up, if this ring and setup may be as part of that. You know, this might be where those matches are filmed. And I gather that Shin Kiba, where it was taking place, they have used it before, but it certainly felt to me like an ideal locale for the AEW matches to emanate from, if that is indeed what they're going for.
I think we're just champing at the bit for them to use all these great wrestlers in AEW, aren't we? We want, like, yes, another link up where we can, the E can bleed into us a little bit and we have an excuse to cover it.
Well, this is the thing. And I think we were sort of WhatsApping back and forth, which is rare, because normally we go into these podcasts completely blind of the other's opinion. But you made the observation that Emi Sakura's new gear look particularly cool, and maybe that was, you know, something that we might be seeing on an episode of Dynamite near you soon. But
perhaps time will tell on that one.
Yeah, but anyway, back to Choco Pro. So four matches on this card. What did you make of it as an overall?
It was heaps of fun and varied. Opener was sufficiently silly and ticked all the boxes for me in terms of, like, the kind of comedy I enjoy in my wrestling.
Sure, yeah, definitely. So as I understand it, based on some information from lastwordonsports.com, and a big shout out to them for their sterling preview work, Real Recognizes Real, so well worth checking that out. This was the first ever six-person tag team match in Choco Pro history.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, hence the chaos. So it was Lulu Pencil, Tokukiko Kirahara, and Che Koshikawa against Sakin, Shino, and our good pal from DDT, Antonio Honda, the female team, all of which were part of the rookie class of Gato Move, made their debuts in 2019. not necessarily sure that you'd know that from watching these guys.
Absolutely,
I thought
they were
all very, very good indeed. And look, man, I just love Lily Pencil. She's she just makes me laugh because she's such a geek, and it's just
you can't help but root for her.
No, I know, but just where she's constantly just failing, or you know, just getting. Well, there was a spot at one point where she was trying to go for her sort of pencil splash, and I forget who the opponent was, but he was too far away, so she instructed one of her partners to put her on her shoulders and carry her over. And just as the person dropped her, the guy rolled up. She's like the wrestling personification of the womp, womp, womp.
It's so true.
And it's great. It's so great.
I challenge you to name me a better underdog face in
definitely.
Wrestling right now.
And when she wins, it's the best thing, you know? Well, I'd assume. I think she's great. She just puts a smile on my face.
One bit that really tickled me was when she tried to go for a kick and it got checked and it just about ended her life.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Yeah, she's so good. I was really, really impressed with Tokukiko Kirahara.
Yeah.
It's the first time I'd seen her and I thought she looked really cool. Good strike.
So the gents team came out with instruments, with Antonio Honda singing. So we had a saxophone and a guitar on the go, and they accompanied themselves down to the ring because there's no theme music in Choco Pro.
So I was watching this one with my very, very young daughter, and she was just sort of happily playing with some toys or what have you whilst I was watching this. And as soon as these gents came out with their sort of brass band or whatever it was, she just stopped and she was transfixed. She couldn't take her eyes off the TV, and her facial expression was as gormless as mine. Like, what on earth is going on here? It was great. So much fun. Whenever I see Antonio Honda, I think we're going to have a good time.
Oh, yeah. You're guaranteed a laugh, aren't you, whenever he's on screen. I think he's somebody that just kind of gets it, and I think whatever show he's on, he adds value to.
Yeah, and he's always got a real cheeky smile to him.
He does.
Like he knows we're about to have it.
Absolutely. And I really like the finish here that was the band striking up again and getting the ladies to sort of clap along and enjoy the music, and that's kind of what cost him the match. And that just plays back to the two singles matches that Honda and Lulu Pencil have had, where it's Lulu's love of music has seemingly cost her the match. So yeah, good long-term booking here from Choco Pro.
I'd like to know, and you know, you may know G, or if not, if any of our listeners who have a bit of Japanese in their locker could help us out. Does Lulu Pencil have any pencil-related wrestling moves? Like, looking for something like a pencil sharpener, you know, or anything along those lines, I'd really like to know. It's anything sort of stationary-related would make my day. So if there is a move that she's using that I'm not aware of, please do tweet us at WrestlingPod without the E. I'd be keen to know. Thank you very much.
Yeah, so that was a super fun opener. Did its job of warming us all up, I think.
Oh yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Starting my day at 9:30 with that. Not too shabby.
No, and shout out to everybody that was in the live chat as well, watching this on YouTube. It was a good time.
It's always such a positive and lovely place.
Yeah,
I think we've mentioned before just kind of what a lovely community Choco Pro has cultivated around it.
Yeah, definitely. Good stuff. Next up, we had a tag team encounter, Emi Sakura and Sayaka Obihiro against Sayori and Sawasti Kamen, who I initially, sort of before I knew this gent's name, was just assuming he was called Captain Gato Move, because he had a sort of Captain New Japan kind of flavour to him, albeit with a much cooler costume. But actually, I was very, very impressed with him. I thought he did some really good stuff. A lot of his moves were very unique. At one point he did, you know, when Zack Sabre Jr. does that kind of bridging pin roll, he did that, but almost into sort of a weird guillotine. It's very difficult to explain. I'm trying to find a gif of it to share, but it was very cool.
Yeah, so this was another fun sort of tag match. Always a treat seeing Emi, and yeah, I think she, I hadn't really seen a lot of Suri and, well, basically anyone other than Emi in this match I hadn't seen a ton of, so it was kind of a really good exhibition of all participants here, really.
Ever since we'd had our chat with Balian, whenever I see Emi Sakura, I always notice the sort of flicker of madness in her eyes, and I can't escape that. There's a genius, a creative genius, but there's a madness to her as well, which is which is fun to watch.
Yeah, it'd just be really interesting to kind of see the world through her eyes, I think.
Yes, definitely. Like, I have a friend who's a puppet maker, and he just walks around seeing, like, oh, there's a bin bag. That could be a dragon. Or, you know, that's how he sees a sieve, and that's going to be a giraffe. You know, that's how he interprets things. And I'm sure Emi Sakura is the same, but just with wrestling.
The lens through which she views the world is very different to everyone else, it seems.
I think so. And we're all the better for it.
Absolutely. Good contest here. Well worth checking out just for the... even without the main event here, even if the show had just been the opening sort of three matches, it still would have been a very worthwhile Choco Pro show.
Yeah, definitely. Because there was an exhibition match here as well, which was Masahiro Takanashi, who has some merch, don't you know? A lot of the focus was on his very nice new t-shirt. And he was against Chon Shiru, who's not somebody I'd seen before, but actually really, really liked. And I will be seeking out more of his work. He seemed very cool. But I gather, again, going back to that last word on sports preview, his name is the Dragon of Choco Pro, which I'm a big fan of as well. Yeah, I like that. I just thought he looked really cool, had some good offense, and this was short and sweet, but for what it was, I thought it was really good.
And then we had it went to a time limit draw, 5 minutes, and then we had a interesting angle post-match, which I don't really fully understand at this point in time. I'm kind of waiting for for somebody who speaks Japanese to hopefully provide context for me here.
Yeah. I mean, if I was to hazard a guess from what I could extract from the chat, a Yumi, or a sort of monster, appeared and kind of hit the ring. And I think it was all a bit of a device to plug Takanashi's nice new t-shirt. But it was it was bewildering and a lot of fun as well.
It sounded like they had it in, the monster and its friend had it in for Chris Brooks.
Oh, okay. I didn't pick up on that. Yeah, this is where you need a sort of DDT English update sort of account.
Just to provide a little bit of context, yes.
To run alongside of it, just to give you a little something if you're not a fluent Japanese speaker.
And then from there we went into the much-hyped tag team title defense.
Yeah, man.
Champions Best Bros making their first title defense against the team of Tropical Mari of Yuna Mizumori and Chris Brooks.
Yeah, very cool. Different flavour to this one entirely, wasn't it? When Best Bros came out, none of the usual joyous shenanigans. It was all very serious and, you know, Balin in particular looked an angry man.
I was expecting my usual sort of May noises and having to have to turn down the volume, but nope, not today.
None of it. They looked dead serious. And it was good, actually, because I felt like it shifted the tone of the entire show, you know, from what had been sort of quite a breezy, laugh-along kind of event overall. This all of a sudden felt like a big deal, so it was very well done.
It did. I do think as well, having it in the ring added to the gravitas of it.
Sure, yeah.
Even on the mats at the usual venue would have been a super fun match, but it just had that extra layer of importance and that being in a traditional wrestling ring could impart on it.
Yeah, and if I don't know if it was said on commentary, it may well have been, but my sort of commentator's instinct would have pitched that as the Best Bros having been at a disadvantage, you know, because they're so used to wrestling on the mats now. And you've got someone like Brooks who's regularly wrestling for DDT, you know, he's very used to being in a ring, or more used to recently being in a ring. So, you know, are they going to be able to translate what they do on the mats to the ring? That would have been the angle I'd approach it
from,
and they may well have done.
Yeah, I really, really enjoyed this match. There was some sort of great moments throughout. Chris Brooks being twice the size of poor May, but kind of May just having all that heart and not letting that stop her for one second.
It works even better because he's quite a slender man.
Yes.
So it looks like she stood next to a really long ruler. Just highlighting how short she is. But I thought this was really expertly booked in terms of a babyface team trying to overcome a dastardly heel. You know, both May and Aki had some really good spots against Brooks where they eventually sort of overcame his cheating or his just generally being a bit of a bastard. And I thought it did a really good job of sort of making you want to see that and then delivering on that.
Oh, absolutely. You know, and Brooks delivering his shut up, May, and kind of pushing her off. And but even that, but that felt really, you know, usually it's delivered in quite a comical way. But in this match, it felt, you know, it really was a shut up, May, and just like threw her off. And it felt violent, like whereas usually it feels like a bit of a joke.
Yeah, for sure. And the fact that she kind of popped up and, you know, stuck him in the chops afterwards, you know, that was, again, that's her sort of overcoming something that's been going on for a while. So I thought it was a really neat piece of storytelling overall. Really got behind the best bros throughout this one.
Definitely. And, you know, we got to see their excellent new tag team finisher.
Yeah, well, a couple of times.
Which I think, you know, is a real treat. And I think we still need to find out what that's called.
We do, yeah. Also, shout out to Yuna Mizumori. I think she's really good.
I do. I really love her.
The Pineapple Girl. Yeah, I've really enjoyed her work. I like her teaming with Chris Brooks. I think that's a nice setup for her. But overall, I think she falls into that sort of similar category as like a Saya Iida or Jordynne Grace, of sort of a less tall but massively powerful, compact wrestler. And that's the kind of, I think that's the sort of wrestler that's really in vogue with us at the second. Mm.
She's someone I could see quite easily making that sort of step up, like May has done, into a TJPW.
Yeah, for sure. Definitely. Yeah.
And that's something I'd probably hope to see in the next sort of 6 months, this next year for her.
I think so. So the Best Bros scooped the win on this one. And then even after the match, the intensity did not drop, as Aki delivered quite a serious promo, direct to camera, as always, you know, thanking the fans for putting him on the map. And it was very heartfelt, but also, you know, suggesting that the issues with Brooks are not yet done. Mm. And you really did feel there was a bit of needle there. So I just thought this was a very well-executed match overall. You know, from start to finish, the story was really good.
Definitely. You know, I don't know if this is a kind of thread that will be pulled, but Brooks wearing his Neo Ito Respect Army t-shirt did make me wonder whether maybe we'd see him and Ito-chan maybe challenge for the tag titles down the line.
Well, that's a bit of fantasy booking that I'd love to see come true. And that's perfect. And look, I'm dead excited about Aki versus Takesta on the Chris Brooks produced DDT show. But had that match not been there, then Best Bros versus the Neo Ito Respect Army would have been sort of very high on my list.
Absolutely. That's definitely a match that I will be disappointed if we don't see at some point.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of your assertion of May and Ito sort of being two sides of the same coin, you know, one the darker end and one the lighter. I think that's a really good observation. So yeah, excited for that one if it ever happens.
Keep my fingers crossed. And then the show ended on a very emotional note as well, with the graduation ceremony / retirement of Mitsuru Kono. The rest of the assembled crew fired streamers over her as she effectively ended her in-ring career.
Yeah, so she suffered an ankle injury, I believe it was last year, and subsequently decided that she was going to have to retire, unfortunately. But she'd been with Gatomu for a long time, trained under Emi Sakura, and you could tell just how emotional this was for everybody involved, and felt very poignant as well. So yeah, really nicely done. No surprises there, though, because I think they do this sort of thing so beautifully.
Definitely. So yeah, that was a lovely moment. And you had Yuna Mizumori came back out and gave a very heartfelt, what must have been very heartfelt, speech to Kono. And then Chris Brooks came out as well and gifted her what looked like a bottle of champagne and sort of wished her well as well. It was really lovely.
I'm amazed you didn't give her a Death by Roll-Up shirt, because those things are worth their weight in gold.
They truly are. They
sell out quick.
And then, yeah, it was just really nice, everyone gathering in the ring and having a beer and toasting her off and taking a photo. And it was just a really lovely way to end what was, I think, a real triumph of a show.
Yeah, and it felt like a real landmark show as well. You know, even just being in the ring and the different setting, for all its weirdness for sort of regular Chocker Pro viewers, it certainly felt like a big deal. There's no denying that. And as an overall four match card, I think they did a really good job.
Definitely. I think if you haven't watched Choco Pro before, this would maybe be a really good, again, jumping on point. just to kind of get a taste of the people involved and to see it in a more traditional setting. Just, you know, if you're a little bit more hesitant about watching a No-Ring show, I think watching this, you'll get a taste for the characters and what it has to offer and might feel a little bit more willing to give it a go.
Yeah, definitely. And I really would encourage you to give it a go. You know, see these guys in their sort of natural setting as well. You know, it's incredible what they do in that space with the mats and, you know, the three walls and the windowsill. They put on some real crackers. So, yeah, as Gareth said, use this, by all means, use this as an entry point. But I would encourage you to go check out Choco Pro in its traditional setting as well. But yeah, overall, thought it was a really fun show. Glad I got up reasonably early, I say early, to watch it. And, you know, looking forward to catching up with Choco Pro in the future. So there we go. No news this week as we were just rammed with wrestling, but that's what we love. It's good stuff. But if you do want some news, why not head over to itrwrestling.com. Myself and Gareth often in the Japan and the elsewhere section, as well as the interview section. So do go and check that out. If you're looking for a hard copy magazine, something to breathe in, then check out Inside the Ropes magazine. InsideTheRopesMagazine.com for all your wrestling needs. You know where we are on the socials. We're at Wrestling Pod. That's Wrestling Without the E on Twitter and Instagram. And WrestlingPod@gmail.com on the email if you want to shoot us an email. And if you want some of the Wrestling Pod merch, the coolest logo in town, then it's www.shop.itrwrestling.com. Now, next week. Oh, yes. It's Fight Forever. The GCW 24-hour production with so many different wrestlers, like the Collective, almost all squeezed in to one solitary day. It's a big thing. It's going to be for charity. You can check it out for free on YouTube and on Fight TV. And to celebrate the occasion, we have enlisted Sondra Roof. Oh yes, from the Queen Street Posse. You may have heard her actually preempt this on the Queen Street Posse episode this week. We're so excited to have her on the show. She's a big GCW fan and a longtime member of the Inside the Ropes family, so it's going to be fantastic to pick her brains on this. And there's so much to choose from. We've selected at least two shows to watch and talk about. So we're going to be talking about For the Culture, which is going to be featuring largely wrestlers of color. We've got the likes of AJ Gray, our man Calvin Tankman, Lee Moriarty is going to be on the show. Willow Nightingale is going to be on from The Bird and the Beast. That's going to be quite exciting. So that's a really fun looking card. And then we're also going to be talking about Effie's Big Gay Block, which is going to be featuring various wrestlers from the LGBTQ plus community. The Effie himself is going to be on there. We've got Still Life with Apricots and Pears. We've got Paro is going to be on the show. So loads of good names on that one as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. And then there's still at least one show up for grabs. I mean, there's so much on there.
We're still fighting amongst ourselves behind the scenes at what show three that we cover should be.
There's a lot of lobbying going on, actually. Yeah, it's so we may even just sort of pick different matches from throughout just to give you a little bit of a flavor. But would encourage you to watch that one as well and then tune in next week to hear our thoughts along with Sondra's. It's going to be a really fun show. Anyway, thanks very much for joining us as always. Hope to see you guys on the social soon. And in the meantime, stay happy, stay safe, and enjoy the graps.